goes through all of the p-sets. In fact, we're through the majority of the most difficult p-sets. So we're actually just going to kind of breeze through the next couple of weeks. We're going to start talking about our final projects, the events coming up in the next like few weeks, and the life will be a breeze. Okay. So not too much today. Hopefully we'll actually breeze through the agenda for today and then be out of here with some time to spare. Also, I want to apologize for the lack of candy today. I don't know why, but in the week leading up to Halloween, I would forget candy. So I'm actually just a vast disappointment to you right now, because I literally remember candy for every single class but Halloween. But next week, I will bring double the amount of candy to make up for that. All for you. It's been great. So I have a couple of announcements regarding some scheduling. Some scheduling issues. But then we're going to move on to talk about what's called Chmod. We're going to talk about quickly TCP, IP, HTTP, and then we're going to code our own website using HTML and CSS, and then I'll actually leave maybe like 20 minutes to talk about PSET 6, because PSET 6 is actually like a lot of stuff that we've already seen before, but I wanted to refresh some of those concepts as well as teach a couple new functions. Cool. So first of all, welcome back from break. I hope your break was enjoyable. What would you do for break?
New York.
You went to New York? Any? I think half her school went to New York. It's all right. I spent most of my break sedentary in bed, Netflixing, and it was a good time. But we are now back in section, back in the swing of things. We have a PSET due this Friday at noon. I think you've already picked up your quiz, yeah? So anyone else who has not had their quizzes, please come and get your quizzes from me at the end of section, or track me down on campus. I'll have it with me somewhere. Our final project pre-proposal also. So for those of us who have never taken this class before, the capstone of CS50 is very much culminated in this grand project that students propose. And the pre-proposal, just the general idea of what one might want to do for their project, that idea is due next Monday at noon. So pretty much, David, I think we'll talk more about this in lecture if he hasn't already. And there's a solid page on our website explaining all the requirements of the project. But essentially, pick any topic that you've been interested in throughout your time here at CS, whether it be gaming or design or video or anything, and you can really kind of now apply some of the lessons that we've learned here in CS50. Hi, welcome here in CS50 to pretty much conducting a final project of your choice. All that's due Monday is just a brief blurb, like via email to me, a quick sentence like, hey, Andy, I'm really interested in like designing a game that does this for iOS. Cool. Just let me know kind of your brief initial ideas for your final projects, and we'll talk through whether or not that is actually a good idea or not, if it's a feasible idea or not, but just the pre-proposal is due next Monday. PSET 6. Our lovely web, that is wrong, PSET 7? PSET 6, it's PSET 6, right? PSET 6, our web server, is due Friday at noon with the late day. Office hours resume normally from Monday to Thursday, 8 to 11 this week. I think commons for the next 3 nights. Cool. Before we head into material, does anyone have any questions, jokes, stories? What'd you do for fall break? Already, it's ages ago, I know, actually. Christabel went to New York. I stayed here and Netflixed.
Oh, yeah, I was here.
Oh, okay. That's okay. Netflixing. Yeah, it's a good time. Okay. All right. Any questions before we jump into material? Also, we're going to try to speed through section today, not too much to cover, and hopefully we'll get out of here a bit early. Sorry, I forgot candy also. I'm a disappointment, especially during Halloween. So. All right. Cool. So we're going to start talking about something, a command line argument called Chmod, where Chmod, all it is just a Unix system call conducted from the command line to change file permissions. So for example, we've all encountered a page like this probably sometime in our lifespan of being an internet user, where our web server has given us the error of forbidden, you don't have permission to access yada, yada, yada on this server. All that really means is that the permissions that were attached to whatever page you were trying to access were not open to you. So pretty much Chmod is the way in which we can modify those system permissions to give everyone, the user, the group, or the world, or any combination of those, access to certain files, directories, anything really, any sort of system on an operating system. So, if any of you guys have computers, if you feel like following along with me today, totally feel free to just type things in. If not, we can just hang out. So, I'm gonna actually pull up my terminal right now. So the command to run chmod, or at least just to list the permissions of your file directory, is just ls negative l. As you can see, a bunch of stuff pops up, most of which is important to us on the left here, hand side here. You guys see a bunch of r's, w's, 1 slashes. Yeah, those are essentially just all the file permissions to explain what certain directories and files within your system have. So let's go back to the PowerPoint here. So in addition to the file names, as you guys could see on the right, we are looking to see essentially just the column on the left. So in addition to just the file names, we can see the permissions of files, their owner group, the group name, the date that the file was last modified, etc. You can see a lot of things using chmod. So the way that we read chmod is that the first letter we pretty much ignore in terms of reading permissions. The first letter just tells us what type of system we're accessing. D in this case is a folder or directory. So we know that currently my workspace section 7 was a directory. And then you see three triads, essentially just three sets of three characters. And you can think of each as a bit. So you just have three sets of three bits, 9 bits in total. You treat them in groups of three. So the first group of three is always your user permissions. Your second group of three is also your group, always your group permissions. And your third set of three is always like the world, the everyone permissions. So I guess an easy question to ask is, what is the difference between user and group? The main difference between user and group is that a user is just you personally accessing whatever it is right now. A group can be if you have multiple users on one computer, for example, all of them can be treated as a group. And then the world is just the world, everyone. So we can see later on how we can modify those into different permissions. So pretty much, we're going to still focus on the part on the left, where for directory CS50, we see DRWX, where the R just means it's readable, the W just means it's writable, and then the X just means it's executable. You think it kind of doesn't make sense, it should be E, but X actually kind of works a little better because you can remember it a bit better. So the three types of things you can do, I guess you can either read a file, you can have permission to write a file, or you can have permission to execute a file. And so the way that we actually represent those in bits is the numbers 4, 2, and 1. So anything that's readable is represented by the bit of the number of 4. Anything that's writable is represented by 2. And anything that's executable is represented by 1. So in this sense, we can also represent these numbers, hi, welcome, in a different way. Sorry, before everyone, I'm going to apologize on behalf of everyone entering the class now. I forgot candy today. I'm sorry, I'm a failure. This week of Halloween, I will bring double the amount of candy next time to make up for it. But anyways, sorry about that, guys. Sorry. So the way that we can actually input this on our command line arguments is we can do chmod group slash permissions, where the group is just whatever group we're trying to change, and the directory and the permissions are whatever we want to add to it. So for example, the plus adds permissions and the subtract takes away permissions. And the types of group we have are A for all, U for users, G for groups, or O for others. So a bit abstract right now, but we'll go over a couple examples just to demonstrate this real quick. Everyone good on this slide, so I can move on. Cool. So for example, RWX. Before we talk about what it represents, first of all, what does RWX, what does that mean? If you see that this certain file has permissions of RWX, what does that mean the person could be able to do? Yeah, exactly. You can read, write, and execute because all three of those characters are present. So if we go ahead and talk about this in terms of bits, the RXW can also be represented as 700 because as you can see, in any sort of file directory permission, you see there's three triads. In this case, only the first triad has anything there. So in this case, the R is 4, the W is 2, and the X is 1. If you add those together, it's 7. And so if you convert it to binary, it's 700, because 7 is the first triad. 0, there's nothing present in the second triad, and then there's nothing present in the third triad, so that's another 0. So in the same sense, like a bunch of triads can be represented just in bits, just in binary as well. So 700 means the exact same thing as RWX dash, 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 dash in terms of permissions. Everyone clear on that? Cool. And so chmod 111 would give which permissions to the file? Give you guys a couple seconds to convert this. Remember, the first triad is for the user, the second triad is for the group, and the third triad is for everyone. And so chmod 111 would give permissions. Which type of permissions and to whom? Take a couple seconds and think about it. I'll come back.
Execute it?
Yep, exactly.
Nobody can read or write.
And I guess feel free to explain to everyone how you came to that conclusion.
Well, for the user, the group, and the world, it's all one,
mm-hmm.
which is the code for executable.
Yeah, exactly. So one in this case, all we know is that that is the executable code, because reading is 4, writing is 2, and the executable is 1. So if all three triads are 1, that means that to the world, to the user, and to the group, they are all executable. Everyone good with that? Okay. And so the second way that we can actually write this also is just we can just do chmod a plus x. A means all or everyone, the plus means giving permissions to, and then the x means executable. So those two commands are actually identical. So if you want to run this in your terminal, you do chmod 111, name of your directory or your file, or you can do chmod a plus x, name of your directory file. Same thing. Just an easier way, perhaps, for some to represent or changing file permissions. Everyone okay with chmod before we move on? Cool. So now we're going to head into a few slides of like very abstract concepts that I'm pretty much going to breeze through. And it's totally okay if you don't understand everything. Even now, I still don't really understand everything completely. But it's more of getting the top level understanding of like how some of these things work. So we're going to talk quickly about TCP/IP, which is just Transmission Control Protocol / Internet Protocol. Recall from lecture, David, did he teach you the example where he'd pass like the notes in an envelope up to like the top of the lecture hall? Yeah. So in the law school auditorium, David demonstrated essentially how TCP/IP works, in the sense that all it is a means of ensuring that data has been delivered across a server or on the internet. So in the example of the envelope and the message, the user at the end could see that, oh, I needed to receive 4 packets of information, but I actually only received 3. That means I must be missing one, and one wasn't delivered. And so TCP/IP on the internet through your computer and the server does the exact same thing. All it does is specifies a framework in which lost data packets can be resent and received. Like on the internet, when you're trying to access files online or send files to your friend or look at web browsers, thousands and thousands and billions of bytes of information are transferred per millisecond. And it's really, really confusing, and it's really hard to actually know like what's been sent and what's not been sent. And so TCP/IP just specifies a cohesive framework in which your web browser and your server can kind of communicate with each other to make sure that like packets are all here and nothing's lost and all the data that you requested is actually displaying properly. Everyone okay on just that like very brief high-level understanding? Okay, so then we're going to move into talking about HTTP, which is just hypertext transfer protocol. HTTP, all it is whatever any page or file is accessed on your website, the server returns an HTTP status code in response to the request, making sure that either, oh, like this request went through and everything's displaying properly, or oh no, like 404, like, oh, something went wrong, oh, I can't display. All it is a means for your, that the whatever you're trying to access, you as the user is trying to access on the internet, if just making sure that you either have successfully accessed whatever it was or not successfully accessed whatever it was. And so the HTTP status code just provides you a means of being able to know whether or not it was successful or not. So for example, an example request, you can see here, usually typically four lines. We have a get HTTP 1.1, which is just the method request URI, the protocol version, the field name, and the field value. So no need to completely memorize anything here. Just kind of familiarize yourself with how these look. In this example, the method request URL is just whatever request you're sending the server, like, hey server, I really want to access yada, yada, yada HTTP page. The protocol version is just whatever version your host or your server is using to access information. The field name is the website or the URL that you're trying to access, in this case, www.apple.com. And the field value is just typically name value. And it can be any sort of combination of letters or numbers or whatever. So typical request, so what your computer actually sends to the server that says, hey, you know what? I need this displayed. That's the kind of request that they actually receive. And an example response of what the server would send back to you would be pretty much the same thing, except with a status code at the top. So 200.200 is always the status code for OK. Like, OK, this request went through. You were able to access everything correctly. Life is good. Life is fine. Everything is totally good. And so this just tells your browser and your server, like, hey, like, everything's good, I got all the information I need, cool. And then, but the problem is, like, sometimes problems come up when you have less, I think I'd have a duplicate slide, you have less good responses. So for example, like, 404 is like the page not found, you sometimes have like the forbidden access, you have various other status codes that I'm sure you've all seen when you're trying to do research on the internet and your browser gives you the, no, cannot access, and you're like, well, crap. So. Just pretty much, there's some pretty common status codes. Maybe familiarize yourself with like which ones those are. The funniest one that I think I've ever heard of, if you happen to look up all of them online, for some reason there's actually a real status code called 4118, I'm a teapot. I think I Googled like where the origin of this was from, and apparently like one April Fool's Day, couple decades ago, someone thought it'd be hilarious to create a new status code called 418 I'm a teapot. Legitimately, the name of this code is called I'm a teapot. And if you try, I forget what page you have to go to actually make this display, but like, apparently you can actually obtain a status code of I'm a teapot somehow through doing something. So there's like hundreds and hundreds of status codes. Some of them make more sense than others, but pretty much just familiarize yourself with the most common ones. The requested entity body is short and stout, apparently. So sometimes there are more frightening errors than I'm a teapot, but this is one that I guess you kind of hope to hit that I don't think you will, but yeah. Everyone good on just status codes, requests, processes, making sure information is like delivered properly? Okay. All right, so now we're gonna transition into kind of a fun part of section today, where we talk a little bit about HTML. HTML, all it is hypertext markup language. It's just the standard language used to create all web pages on the internet. So, any web page, what's your favorite web page? What's your favorite web page?
Tumblr.
All right, so Tumblr is written in HTML. And so we'll go through and play around with some of these things later on. Pretty much everything you need to learn to know to write HTML, you can probably just Google on the internet. Like HTML, it's not a program like C where you can like create variables and do cool things with it. It's more of just, oh, this is how I want things to appear on my website, and I'm just gonna put it in, and it's gonna style it. So HTML, in a sense, it's kind of just like a formatting or a template language. It's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to learn, a lot easier to write in than your typical programming language. Very easy, very user accessible and friendly. So we're actually going to play around, write our own web pages today. But before we begin, I just want to go over some brief best practices. Because HTML is such an easy language, and because even if you do a couple things wrong, it sometimes may not notice, we want to make sure that we're actually adhering to our best practices to make sure that like things that could be going wrong but aren't always going to not go right, make sure that like they're minimized. So Pretty much make sure you're closing all of your tags when you're writing in HTML. If you're opening a body, make sure you're closing it with a body somewhere. You want to make sure that your web page validates by using what's called the W3 validator. You can just Google that online, and there's a link to it. And then you want to separate HTML, which is your markup language, from your style, which is the CSS language that David demonstrated that we're also going to play around a bit today with lecture. Cool. So anytime you want to run HTML on the CS50 appliance, we're going to run a program called Apache, which all it is just a built-in web server that everyone in CS50 has access to. We call it Apache 50 just because we like to call everything 50 in CS50. So the way that you start the CS50 web server is by typing on your command line, Apache 50 start dot. And if you want to end it, at any time you do Apache 50 end, no dot. And you just hit enter, and it should be heading up here soon. Yep. So I'm just going to quickly go over like an example of a really brief web pages, and we're going to spend like 10, 15 minutes playing around, writing our own web pages. OK. So here in the IDE, can everyone see that? Not really. Here, I'll zoom in. I've just got this brief template here with nothing actually in it. We're just going to quickly write an HTML program in which we just say hello to the world. So same thing as in C, now we're going to just do it in HTML. Does anyone want to actually just try giving me the first thing you would have to put in an HTML document? Yeah.
The
brackets, the exclamation point, dot type. Yep. So something that's very unique to HTML that we typically traditionally don't encounter in other like command line level programming languages is that we actually have to specify the type of file that this is going to be at the top of our code. So in this instance, I think that's the right command, right? It's yep, at the top, you just want to include bang doc type HTML in brackets just to tell your computer like, hey, look out, an HTML document is coming. And then how do we want to start off our file? If we just want to say hello, we'll have a web page that says hello to the world. How do we go about building this? Actually, let's turn to Google and we can actually do this. So yep, there we go. So HTML. As you can see, my browser is actually automatically styling this for me. Same thing as in C, when you create like an open curly brace, your browser automatically adds in a closed curly brace. Luckily, our IDE loves to do this for us as well. So now we can kind of type the beginning of a tag, and it's going to always tell us to remember to type the end of a tag. Oh, I think this needs to be capitalized. And then we want to add always a head, in which is the title. We just want to maybe call this like hello, and then body. And there you go. That is actually our HTML document. So the way that any HTML document is always styled in is you want to, same thing with like int main void, you always want to have HTML, an open and closed tag at the top and bottom of your code. You want to have a head inside which contains a title, just whatever is going to display it, like the tab of your web page, and then a body inside which it will actually display like the content of whatever you want to do. So if you wanted to actually run this, I'm going to zoom back out. We can actually start Apache 50 start dot. Cool. And so as you can see, now this link has popped up. It says your site is now available at some link below. So all our IDE has done, our IDE has done is create a web link upon which all of our code, our web pages, can be accessed on the server. So let's take a look here. Let's click on this. Go to hello.html, and you can see a very simple web page for Hello World. OK. We're actually going to just have everyone, yeah, what's up? Yeah.
How do you save your file as an HTML?
Yeah, so you can actually, like, so if I were to create a new file, right? If I would do new file, untitled. If I do, like, section.html, boom. That's all I have to do.
So you didn't do anything else?
Nope. Yeah. Pretty much the extension on the file that is inside your IDE, that tells the computer, that tells the browser, like, hey, look out, this is going to be code written in this language. So for example, like in Microsoft Word, what do all Word documents end with? What extension? .doc or .docx, right? All that does is specifies to your operating system, hey, you've got a Word document coming up, open it with Word. Same thing with like PDFs. It knows, oh, I need to open up this file with like Adobe Reader or like Adobe Acrobat. And so extensions operate the same way as in your computer. If you specify like your code page to be named HTML, then it knows, oh, you've got HTML code. I'm going to treat it as HTML code. Yep. So it's super smart in that sense. Okay. So, yep. Everyone, let's take like 10 minutes and just create our own websites. Let's add in lovely things. Feel free to say whatever you want. Just want to make sure that everyone's servers are running correctly before we free you into the PSET. Because if your servers don't run for the PSET, that will be really, really bad. Just gonna flit around and see what everyone's working on. How's it going?
I just turned on my computer.
That's okay.
What's the website? I'm sorry. I'm like
just your ID. It's okay.
Sorry. Well, cold medication.
Totally fine. Is everyone accessing their web server okay? Is Apache 50 running okay? I think in some of the other sections we had issues with people not being able to access the server. Yeah, so you just run Apache 50 space start space period.
Okay.
Yep. Good?
So if this is starting.
Oh, okay. So you're supposed to have a space. So Apache
I did.
50 start space.
Oh, space dot.
Yep, space dot. There you go. So then if you have an HTML page created, then you can just like go to directly to the link that it specifies, and you should be able to access it. Everyone able to like access their web pages okay?
Yeah, although I have nothing in mind.
Oh, that's okay.
I think so. Are we supposed to be able to double click on this?
Yeah. I think you can actually open it within like your browser and not just like your IDE browser.
Okay.
I think if you copy and paste it.
Okay. And then how do we turn it off, Apache 50?
Yeah, you do Apache 50, stop, with no period. Yep.
Oh.
With no period. Yeah. There we go. Yep. We're creating our own web pages. Yeah.
I did testing.
Uh-huh.
And so, Apache
50, yeah.
Start.
What? That is weird. See, that was kind of the issue that was happening before. See me after section because we are having some issues with the server, and you're gonna make sure you want to make sure that your server is running before starting the PSAT because you're gonna need it. Okay. Yeah. Is there anyone else that hasn't been able to get their server to start? For those of you who want to add like additional style to your web pages, we can actually do what David did in lecture as well, which is create an additional style sheet, which is a .css cascading style sheet, and actually just add it in. So for example, I've just created like pretty much almost the exact same one David did in section or in lecture. You can pretty much just do body. You have what are called tags. In which you can apply to ID whatever it is that whatever section you want if within your actual HTML page. So the body of the page, you can do text align center. And then I can create a tag called top inside of which I want these things to happen, assign a larger pixel size for the font. I want the font weight to be bold and I want the color to be blue, just arbitrary values that I decided to choose. I can create another tag called middle, font size making it a bit smaller, and then I can create another tag called bottom, where I want the font size to be even smaller still. And so pretty much this is just like example of source code or source style sheets that it's very easy to just Google. If you say, oh, I want my font to be italicized and dark green, you can probably Google, and then it will tell you the appropriate like tags or IDs to create. And so the way that you would actually kind of have this in a HTML document or kind of use it is all you have to do here is at the head add a link to the style sheet. So you can just link href equals whatever the name of your style sheet is, and then the relationship is a style sheet. So within any HTML document, as long as you include this .css sheet, you should be able to just access and have the properties of there. So for example, here I've just created another example web page. It says, welcome to CS50 section, Tuesdays from 2 to 3:30 with me. And then I've added a lovely image that we potentially should be able to see. So if we take a look here, if you go to style.html, create a web page with kittens, because kittens are awesome. So adding an image is just img src link. Yeah. Pretty much if there's any sort of feature you want to add to your website, so let's say you want to add a menu or like a search bar or like an image, just Google how to do that and you just plop in that format and you can pretty much just add it in. It's really, really easy. We are creating our own web pages right now. If you want to, sorry? Oh, the div is just a division telling me that like, oh, like I have a certain section called middle in which I'm applying like my CSS tag and then my other division with like the bottom. That's all it's telling it. It's because it's nice to keep things neat in order so that like the program knows how exactly to run. And I think I can copy paste this into my actual browser as well. It should be fine. Yeah. Yay. So if everyone wants to just like try creating a web page, we'll take like another two, three minutes. I just want to make sure everyone's servers are running and everyone has an idea of how to do that. If you guys want to take our computers. Still not working?
Yeah, I'm just re-uploading.
Maybe try update 50 as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saved my book that I've done.
So the way that you start any web server on the IDE is just do Apache 50 space start space dot. I just wanted to make sure everyone's servers are running okay.
Here on the terminal?
Yeah. Apache? Actually, I think you're running something already. Yeah, you're actually running a different server. Yeah, you're good. As long as that's working, you're okay.
Okay.
There's two ways to run servers. So as long as one of the ways. You're working, it's all right. Okay, we'll take like another minute just to kind of finish up the finishing touches, whatever web page you guys wanted to make. Is everyone working, by the way? Everyone's like servers are running besides for yours. We'll figure that out. And like HTML is like fairly simple, so I think we're all good. Yeah. Yeah, I'll come back.
I'm a little behind because I'm in my hibernation.
Okay.
So it's just starting to load up.
No worries. So HTML, there's like source code that will be online after section, and also David has like a whole bunch online as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of glance over it to see how like HTML pages are written.
Okay.
Fairly easy. Anything you don't know, you pretty much just Google, and you're good. I just wanted to make sure that your servers are running.
Does it do this often?
It's never happened to me, but. I didn't even know it could even hibernate.
I didn't either.
Yeah. I think everyone's is. Mine has never hibernated before, and I don't know why. It's
no,
weird.
It stuck.
Was yours hibernating?
Yeah. Once,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll deal with some server issues after section. It should be fine. Although you want to make sure you get them resolved before you leave, because if your server's not running, then you're not going to be able to do the pset, like any part of the pset. So you want to make sure that that's working. Cool. All right. Say goodbye, kittens. I spent like a long time looking for that kitten picture to put on. So, anyways.
Wait, so how do we access the pset from that?
Sorry. I think it's on the website. It says 50, like the spec.
Okay.
I think the spec is just online in week 7.
Yeah.
I think it's called PSET 6, even though we're in week 7, which is a bit confusing.
But I mean, like, if we want to look at, so, like, we want to pull up our version of the website from, like, our server. So, like server.c is the PSET, right? Like, if we want to look at this, like, how it checks out.
Oh, so actually the piece that all we're doing here is implementing, here, I'll go over this briefly.
Yeah.
Okay. So for everyone that's just gotten to section, you guys are in luck. There was very little material to actually cover today. I'm just gonna spend the next like 20 minutes going over like pset help, because there's some useful functions that will help your life, and then hopefully we'll get out of here in like 20 minutes. Okay. So pset 7 is wrong. Even though we're in week 7, it's actually pset 6. I'll change that. All we're doing in pset 6 is creating a web server. That sounds super scary, and especially for those of you who have already looked at the distribution code, there's like a lot of code. But it's totally okay, because the nitty-gritty part of actually creating the server is done by us. All you're really asked to do in this pset is just to do some like string manipulation and file IO. It's actually like fairly simple. So when you first download that, who here has actually already downloaded the pset and taken a look? All right, yeah, there's like 500 lines of code that you're going to be like, what is going on? And that's totally fine. Make sure you watch the walkthroughs, because David and I don't think it's Amyla's this one, but I think some other walkthroughs are like fairly helpful. in terms of just letting you know like what is going on inside of your code. And it's totally okay because the four functions that you're asked to implement are actually zero, have actually zero to do with the actual server. All they have to do is just parsing different strings, like searching through strings to make sure like things are like doing what they're supposed to be doing. So to that effect, there are some very, very useful functions, especially for string manipulation, that we should all go over that I thought would be very useful for you guys to learn before attempting the pset. And they're all contained within their string.h library. There's probably more useful functions I haven't included here because I either never used them or perhaps like I just didn't know they exist. Feel free to just glance through string.h because there's going to be a lot of functions that are very useful. So the six that I used the most in my pset when I was doing it this past week were strtoke, strchur, strarcher, strstr, strcaseComp, and strcopy. And so the last two may seem like pretty familiar to most of you. StrcaseCompare, all it is compares strings to check them for equality, including case, and strcopy just copies one string into a buffer. And so those two should seem like very familiar to you guys at this point, because we've used them a lot, especially for the last pset. But the first four, perhaps you haven't seen up until now, but I'm going to kind of just walk through them because they're going to make your lives really, really easy for, not easy, but much easier for this upcoming pset. Okay, so char star stir toke, this is the function definition for this function. Contained within the string.h library, all it does is break, if you're given an input of char star string, which is just a string, or a constant char star delimiter, delim for short, all it's doing is breaking the larger string into a series of what we call tokens separated by a certain value. So in a sense, like if I were to give you section dot 7 dot php, right? This is a string. So that would be, if I were to pass in this as my str, my char star str, all this function would do, and if my delimiter, delimiter was the, I don't know, like dot, right? All this would do is search through string, and the first time it sees a dot, it would just return the pointer to the last token found in the string before this. So it would go right here, and it would just give me 7.php. And if I were to call the function one more time, it would give me just the .php. And so all this function is doing is breaking down a larger string into smaller strings depending on what you're looking for. And so, for example, in like your lookup function, if you want to look at what certain like characters come about, or if dots happen, or if extensions happen, like this function would be fairly useful. Yeah. No worries. This will all be, yeah, what's up?
So in the like first line, what would we, if we were using this example, yeah, what would we like insert into that?
Yeah, you just do, you would just call stir toke. String, comma, delim. And string is equal to section.7.php, and then your delim could be equal to just like dot.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep, just like that. Yeah. All these functions are like fairly similar when we go through them. They just do like slightly different things, but they're all gonna like make your life a lot easier. Second function, this one's like super, super, super important, is the, hold up. Oops, yeah. Strchur searches for the first occurrence. Actually, yeah, strchur is the function that I definitely just went over. So ignore what I said for the first function. It's actually called strchur. So what would happen here is if you were to give it a string and a char c, it would just give you whatever that was. Yeah. So think of it as str, which is a string, and char as char. So all you're trying to do is search for where a char is within a string. And so it searches for the first occurrence of the character c in the string str. Yep. And then if it didn't find it, it's going to return null. So something that's going to be very useful for you guys in doing the pset, if say you were like looking for an extension, like a .docx for a Word document, or like a .pdf for a PDF document, you can kind of use it to look for whatever is afterwards if you, every time you see a dot, right? And so pretty much if you run that through the function, if it returns null, then you know that it didn't find a dot, which means this clearly isn't a valid file extension. Or if it returns something, then you know it's going to return whatever's actually after the extension. So those of you who started looking through like lookup and parse, this function is going to be super useful. So we're actually going to demonstrate kind of just like using this. Why don't you guys try writing a function, bool sentence char star s, that just returns true if s is a sentence and false otherwise. So hint, you're going to probably use str char, where you just search in a string for a certain character. And so in a sentence, what's the difference that, what separates a sentence from a non-sentence? What specific character? A space, right? And so what are we probably going to want to do within this function here? Yeah, we're going to want to search our string for the appearance of a space. Because if it returns something, then we know that this must be a sentence. That means that we must have a space in the string. If it doesn't, if there's no space, then we know that, hey, guess it's not a string. It's probably just like a really long word. Okay, so I give you guys like a couple minutes to write this function.
The string from the user?
Yeah, so this is just a function. So imagine like inside your main function, you already have, let's go here. Okay, so I've written this program where I have my main function where I've just created two strings. The first one is, hi, my name is Andy, clearly a sentence. My second one is just Andy, clearly not a sentence. And so I'm running both of those strings through this function I want you guys to write called sentence, and I'm storing those values and then just printing them out. So think that like the user is going to pass in a string and that you're going to essentially figure out if it's a sentence or not and return true or false accordingly. You guys want to like give like a thumbs up or heads up, head nod, if anyone's ready to start this, be good. maybe like 30 more seconds. All right, let's see if we can try writing this function. So pseudocoding it, I'm just gonna kind of walk through this right now. Pretty much, we know the function that we need to use. We're gonna call that function on our string and search for a space. If it returns something, then we must know that clearly this is a sentence because there's spaces that we're gonna return true, else we're gonna return false. Does anyone wanna give me the first line of code that we're actually gonna use to write this? It's actually the hardest line of code as well, so. Yeah.
If stir clock s or s comma space is not equal to null.
Cool. Exactly right. Everyone understand that first line? We're going to call searcher, which is a function that searches the string s for the char of space. And if it finds it, it's going to return where a pointer to where that is. If it doesn't find it, it's going to return null. So if it returns anything other than null, then we know it's found a space. Does that make sense? Cool. All right, so if we know it's found a space, what do we want to do?
Return true.
Yeah, return true. And then someone want to finish out the function for me? Yeah, exactly. Else? Just like that. And try compiling this. Yep. So as you guys can see from the outputs, remember Booleans in C are always expressed in binary. One is true, zero is false. If we were to run this function on string one, which is hi, my name is Andy, clearly in sentence, the result printed out to one, which is true. The second one, which is just a word, result printed out to zero, which is false. Everyone clear kind of on how this function was written? Yeah.
Could we also do, like, instead of doesn't equal null, could we do equals equals zero? So like that it's equal to?
No, because stirTrue is a function. So what's the return? I'm gonna go back to this. So what's the return type of our stirTrue function?
Oh, okay, or null.
Yeah, it's a char star, right? That tells me that whatever this function is going to return, it's going to be a pointer. Either the pointer is going to be pointing to where it's found it, or it's going to return a pointer to null. In either circumstance, like, it's going to return a pointer to something. And so if you were to equate this equals equals zero, you're going to get a compilation error, because it's going to return a pointer. You're going to try to compare a pointer to an integer, and the computer is not going to like that. Yeah, exactly. Cool. Everyone, good. Okay. And secondly, we're going to go over a function called stirStir. No worries if these functions are confusing you. They are confusing me. As such, you guys could have seen, they all like sound pretty much the same. Just whenever you're confused, pull up like the string.h library, and you guys can like sort through which one's which. So stirStir, all that does is searches a string for a whole under string. So where stirCHAR just search for a single character, stirStir searches for an entire string. So if I wanted to look for in like, I don't know, hi, my name is Andy, and my best friend's name is also Andy. If I wanted to look for in the sentence, like for the entire word of Andy, my needle would have been whatever you're looking for, and your haystack is whatever you're looking for it in. So if you're looking for a specific word within a sentence, that word is going to be your needle, and then the sentence itself is going to be your haystack. And so it just searches the first occurrence of the string needle and the string haystack. It returns the pointer to the first occurrence. Except remember, in this case, it's the first occurrence of the entire string that you're searching for, not just a character. And so this is almost the same thing as the function we just did, just with a bit more like specificity, because you're searching for more than just one character. Yep. And the usage is the exact same as the one that we just did. Yep. Everyone okay with this? Okay. Okay. Last one we're going to go over is stir-urcher, which is not confused with stir-stir or with stir-tur. Stir-urcher has an extra R in there. Be careful when you're typing. You may find yourself including an extra R or not including an R, and then your function is not going to work and you're going to be confused. Be careful like that you're spelling all these functions right. So stir-urcher is the exact same thing as stir-tur, except it searches for not the first occurrence of a specific character, but rather the last occurrence. And so, in that sense, it's almost the exact same, but instead of moving forward in a string, you're going to be moving backwards in a string. Exact same thing, you're just searching in a different order. And so this could be super, super useful for your lookup function, the first function on your pset. Let's pretend that we needed to write a function, a void extension, in which we pass a constant char style file name, just a string, a file name, that takes in that name and prints out the extension of that file. So for example, like if I were to pass in the string of pset7.zip, it's going to print out just the extension, which is .zip. And this would work for any sort of extension, .doxc for Word, or .pdf for a PDF file, or .html for an HTML file. Pretty much write a function that can do that. I'm actually going to switch over to the IDE. It does not load. Oh, there we go. So all I've done here is created a first string called pset7.zip. I'm going to zoom in. I've created a second string called finalpaper.docx. And write me a function that, when called, is going to just print out the file name extensions. Maybe take a couple minutes to think about how you're going to do this. Slightly more challenging than the last one, but the usage is almost exactly the same. Yeah, so write a function called extension that just takes, if I give you the name of a file, like if I were to give you pset7.zip, I want you to print out just the .zip. If I give you like finalpaper.docx, just print out the .docx, just the extension of whatever file. This actually only takes like 2 lines of code. So try to see if you can maybe do it in that. Actually, it only takes 1 line of code, but 2 lines is probably more standard. What function are we probably going to want to call?
Stir-urcher,
right? Because we're looking from the right left. In case, like, I didn't give you guys an example like this, but if I give you an example like www.apple.com and I just wanted the .com, it'd be a good example of like where you want to call the last instance of the period and not the first, right? If you were to call stir-tur, it would have given you the apple.com. If you called stir-archer, it would have given you the .com. And so be careful on like which ways. Like in my example, you could have just written it using stir-tur since there's only one dot. But in other instances, that may not be the case. And so always try to design your code well so that, yeah.
So in the example you just said, would it, like when you do stir-urcher, it would .com or just com?
It would give you the .com. It points to where it found it. Yeah. 30 seconds, maybe? Yeah. Everyone good, or maybe a bit more time? Hands, show of heads. Okay, cool. Anyone want to give me the first line of code for this program? Okay. So, first of all, let's maybe break this down. So what is the return type of StirUrcher? Let's go back. StirUrcher, what is the return type? It's a char star, right? Which means that you're probably going to want to create another char star to kind of store whatever it's returning to you, right? Because if you call the function like StirUrcher, it's going to like give you a pointer to wherever it found that last period, right? But you're going to want to store that somewhere, right? And so how do we kind of code this into our program?
Char star pointer.
Yep. StirUrcher, yeah. Oh, missed an R there.
File name, or what is it? Oh, it's just S.
Oh, it's just S, yep. Sorry, my bad. Examples did not match.
And then dot.
Yep. Be careful when you guys are, here, let me zoom in, yeah. Ah. There we go. Be careful when you guys are typing, especially when you're doing just a char. It's really easy to accidentally just do double quotes rather than single. That will not work. Your function's just going to, your compiler's going to complain, and your function's just not going to run. And so be careful when you're doing things with chars that it's single quotes. And so does this line of code make sense to everyone? We're creating a char star pointer because StirUrcher returns something of type pointer. And so we're going to call StirUrcher on S, which is the string, the file name that we're passing in. And we're looking for the last instance of a period, which is just the single quote dot single quote. Yeah.
When do we use double quotes and when do we use single quotes?
Yeah, so double quotes are always used when you have a string of more than just one. So if you're doing like stir, which is the one that you search a string for a string, you would pass in double quotes. But anytime it's just a single character, you want to do single quotes. Yeah, that's a good thing to keep in mind. Okay. And so now that we have our pointer, what do we do with it? I'm asking you guys to printing it out, right? So what do we, Elliot, you want to give me the line of code?
Printf.
Yeah.
You need a placeholder.
Yep.
Print the placeholder. I don't know what the placeholder is for a pointer.
OK, let's skip that for now then.
And then comma.
Pointer, right?
Pointer.
Yep. So kind of a trick question. Has to do with pointers and strings that we've kind of talked about already. What kind of placeholder do we need for our pointer, for our char star?
Oh, wait, I remember this.
Yeah, it's easier than you guys think it is. Yeah, it's just a string, yeah, exactly. Because remember, strings don't really exist. A char star is the exact same thing as a string. And so really, this S is what should have been used all along. OK, let's see if we can try running this. Let's do make extension. Cool. You guys see how I passed in the pset7.zip and the final paper.docx, and it just prints out the .zip and the .docx. Make sense? Okay. So I think in your lookup function in your pset, you're going to be asked if like the string has a certain ending. You have to give like a certain error code, and so this will be like pretty helpful because if you can figure out what the extension is, you can then compare that extension to see if it matches up with a certain extension, and then you can return an error message, right? Yeah.
One or anything, so the pointer will go to the point after it.
Yeah, it points exactly to where the occurrence was. So, for example, here we're searching for the period, so it's going to return a pointer to the period. So, and then it's going to print out starting at the period, so you don't need to add one. Although it's totally fine to just like, if you're always unsure, if you're ever unsure, to just kind of test it out yourself, like build a sample program, test it out yourself and see where it's printing. Yeah, that's also not a bad way to do it. Cool. And that's pretty much all I had for you guys today. We did a lot of pset stuff today. So when in doubt, like I said, always look up the string.h library for this pset. There's going to be a lot of functions in there that may be useful. Some may not be useful. I don't really know. Wade through. There's a whole bunch of them. Stir, 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 chur, stir, er, chur are super, super helpful, as well as the stir copies and stir case compares that we've already used. It's just a lot of like messing around with strings, determining if they're equal, like getting stuff out of strings, and like being able to open like files correctly. It's a lot of file I/O. Pset's really not that bad. You're going to take a look at it, download it, and see a whole bunch of code. No worries. The code you actually write is not bad at all. If anyone has issues with their server, come see me after section. Apologize once again for not bringing candy to Halloween. I don't know what was wrong with me. But we will have double the candy next time. And good luck in your pset this week.